Why is it, do you think, that it's so important at that young age to be having those conversations and with that diverse perspective of what they could be looking at?
So I think it was surprising to us as well as we started looking at the research. So we know that children create gender biases between ages 5 and 7. Girls' confidence in STEM drops at age 8, and it remains that way well into their teens and beyond. And then we know that from Canadian research from Manitoba, there's an organization called Career Trek, and they found that children and their parents in grades 5 and 6 are most engaged in career exploration and most curious. So we're talking about our 11 and 12 year old children. And then it rapidly drops off in junior high when the peer group becomes more important to the student. And then the biases start to occur. And then as we get closer to the, you know, that end of high school, those kids are looking at what they want to be. There's more pressure from parents. And those biases are not only there, but they're starting to become more pervasive in what the decision is for their post-secondary choices. And so when you look at all of that, you realize, hold on a second, if we want to avoid in our country the average age of an apprentice being between ages 26 to 29, and we want to make sure our children who are neurodiverse or who learn best with their hands are getting the opportunity to realize there's careers for them early on and feel a sense of belonging. And we look at that research I just mentioned, it really shows us that we have to light the spark in elementary school.
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight, I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And today I'm joined by Angela Coldwell in Canada, which is my first Canadian interview, so I'm very excited.
Oh, thanks for having me. I hope you are able to talk to more Canadians because there's a lot of neat stuff happening here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, and as I told you the other week when we chatted, my brother-in-law is over there at the moment. So who knows, maybe we could do a face-to-face interview one day.
Oh, that would be great.
So really keen to talk with you today about, so you're the founder of Honor the Work. So really keen to chat about all that you're doing there. So would you want to start with what is it that you do through Honor the Work?
So our biggest focus at Honor the Work is to actually expose elementary children in grades 1 through 6 to the skilled trades. And we do so by creating lesson plans that already support the existing curriculum and then also provide diverse children's books and a class set of building materials so that teachers are able to actually present the diverse skilled trades careers that they often don't talk about because often they talk about college and university programs. And so it's a way to help bridge the current needs we have in our workforce, but also connect teachers with careers that have typically not been talked about before.
Mm, yeah, awesome. And so why was it that you decided to launch this? What was it that made you passionate about this space?
So I think it's kind of twofold. One is that I was a high school chemistry and physics teacher. And so I didn't realize I had biases myself about different careers until one day I had one of my grade 10 students tell me he wanted to become an electrician. And I thought, oh, I don't even know what to say to this. So I suggested electrical engineer because having gone to university, I was familiar with that. And when he told me, no, I don't want more time in the classroom, I'd like to go and have a career that works with my hands, I realized, gosh, I don't know much about this. And I was fortunate that my husband was in the construction industry and he had a huge value for people in the trades. And he was an engineer and he is an engineer. And so he said, if I don't understand the blueprints, I go to the people on the tools and I trust them over everyone else. And so, you know, that was back 20 years ago. And fortunately, he corrected my misunderstanding back then so that, you know, I really started to value the skilled trades as a possible career path for my students. But really, it happened in about 2020. We said, well, hold on a second. You know, there is a lack of understanding about what a skilled trades career is. We have a huge demand for it in our country. 700,000 people in our industry will retire. That's 44% of our workforce by 2028. And so what could we do to help to bridge what is needed by workforce, but also these very valuable intellectual, intellectually, physically and financially stimulating and rewarding jobs? How can we help teachers better understand what this is like and what these roles look like? And so that's really where the idea came from. And we know that a lot of advocacy happens in high school or junior high. But when we looked at the research, it was actually elementary school. And that was the key time to actually light sparks in students and help teachers at the younger level when they're talking about community helpers, be able to actually have the information as well as the hands-on activities to support these conversations and then have beautiful, diverse children's books so that all children of genders and cultures could see themselves reflected in the architectural, engineering, construction, and skilled trades industry. So it was really, I guess, a morphing of my husband's experience in construction and mine as a teacher, and realizing I had some what I call innocent blind spots, some real biases I didn't mean to have, but just due to the fact I had gone through my education and science degrees, somewhere along the way kind of became someone who was much more stressing those as career options to my students and just not doing any kind of justice at all to careers that were beyond that.
I think it's so great that targeting that younger age group, because yeah, it's definitely something that I think typically in most school systems, career conversations full stop probably aren't even really being had at the level that they could be and should be to help people and young children actually identify the pathways that they want to explore from a young age. Why is it, do you think, that it's so important at that young age to be having those conversations and with that diverse perspective of what they could be looking at?
So I think it was surprising to us as well as we started looking at the research. So we know that children create gender biases between ages 5 and 7. Girls' confidence in STEM drops at age 8, and it remains that way well into their teens and beyond. And then we know that from Canadian research from Manitoba, there's an organization called Career Trek, and they found that children and their parents in grades 5 and 6 are most engaged in career exploration and most curious. So we're talking about our 11 and 12 year old children. And then it rapidly drops off in junior high when the peer group becomes more important to the student. And then the biases start to occur. And then as we get closer to the, that end of high school, those kids are looking at what they want to be. There's more pressure from parents. And those biases are not only there, but they're starting to become more pervasive in what the decision is for their post-secondary choices. And so when you look at all of that, you realize, hold on a second, if we want to avoid in our country the average age of an apprentice being between ages 26 to 29, and we want to make sure our children who are neurodiverse or who learn best with their hands are getting the opportunity to realize there's careers for them early on and feel a sense of belonging, and we look at that research I just mentioned, it really shows us that we have to light the spark in elementary school. And so if we don't do that, when kids go on to junior high, they don't realize there's even tech options for them or that there's careers. And then when they're in high school, to all of a sudden say, okay, like, let's start to make a decision about what you're going to become. If we've never given them all those years before, grades 9 or 10, letting them know that there are careers beyond just post-secondary, which we tend to call college university, we don't even mention that apprenticeship is post-secondary. So if we're all of a sudden now in grades 9, 10, 11, 12 saying, okay, there's these other options and maybe we'll touch on them in a little bit, we're really not doing justice, I don't think, to our students and to the parents in terms of informing them about, one, what workforce needs, but also where our children's, abilities and talents and interests may lie. Because a lot of kids, like my student in grade 10, he didn't want to be in the classroom for longer. So the longer we get those kids to realize that there are diverse roles that we all need, and it takes the village idea, I think the more we're able to make sure that students throughout their journey, K to 12 and then beyond, are finding careers that are meaningful to them, that they can have positive impact in the community, they can contribute to climate change, and it can align with their own values. And the sooner kids realize that there are careers like that, the more I think content they are, the more they feel a sense of belonging, the more they are hopeful, and the more it engages them in school because they realize there's a purpose for what they're learning if we can connect it to their real world. And then the same with parents. But then it helps them to realize as well and normalize that there's three paths that the kids can take, college, university, or apprenticeship, and they're all equitable. It just depends on how the children learn. And the longer parents sit with that too, the more we normalize it and then start to counter those stigmas and stereotypes that I think both of our countries share, that these are a lesser path for kids who couldn't get into college and university, when really it's just, it's a different path for kids who just don't want to be in a college or university program or work in an office space for the rest of their lives. So it's just, I think, a normalization. And the same with our industries. We are primarily male populated in Canada for the trades. So if we want to see the other 50% come to the table, and as well as our new Canadians to our country, we have quite a lot of immigration, we really need to make sure that kids can see themselves in those roles. And children's books do a great job of that, because they see themselves or someone from their culture represented or someone from their gender. And just like often we have more females in nursing and more males who are carpenters, there's no reason that has to be that way. It's just that if that's all children see, that's what they think is the norm. And they internalize that. And so that's where, going back to that age 5 to 7, the earlier we can show them that this is not the norm, that, you know, maybe this is how it's been portrayed, but it's really for anybody. You choose what works for you and what you want to pursue. Then all of a sudden, I think we start to see in the coming years that diversity continuing to increase. So if we're working at the elementary level and governments and nonprofits are working at the older level, at some point in time, we're going to find that, you know, in the coming years, we're going to meet and we're going to just then continue that diversity and that inclusion that we're all working towards really start to come to fruition.
Hey, Alex here. Just wanted to reach out to everyone and say thank you so much for following along with the Brand My Career podcast. I'm really loving having the conversations that I'm having and bringing this content to people. I want to keep bringing more content to people. I want to bring stories of people's career journey. And one of the ways that I can be doing that is by getting your support. And one of the ways you can do that is by shouting me a coffee. On my website, you can find the link to shout me a coffee to help me keep bringing more content, building what I already have done and improving it, getting better, getting more and more people on and sharing their career stories and the lessons that they've learned along the way. So thank you for following along, and would you consider getting on board and helping me take it to new heights?
Hmm.
So much in that. The books look really good. I love the look of the children's books that you've done. And I think that probably goes a long way of creating these really great resources that people really want to engage with and really enjoy. And that sort of feeds into the part around, one, there's the part around supporting the teachers, but then also supporting the parents with, you know, empowering them to support through this. How important is it to be supporting these key people that are around these young people to be supporting them, to guide them throughout this process?
I think it's essential, because if we look at our educators, we know that a lot of times when they're going through their undergrad programs for education, they're not talking about careers. So we realize that we often think it's left to the guidance counselors, but the guidance counselors have such a huge ratio of students to work with in our high schools, you know, 1 to 300, I'm going to say, in Canada. And so, and ultimately the classroom teacher has way more time with the students than a guidance counselor does. So really we need to not just be saying, well, let's advocate to the guidance counselors to start talking more about careers. We need the entire K-12 system of educators to learn about these careers too, and just have a realization that maybe we do have an unconscious bias that we are promoting certain careers over others, and then really have an honest conversation about why is that, and is that really the right way to, in our skills economy, is it really the right approach, and is this really the right jobs that we should be continuing to perpetuate and say these are high demand, when really a lot of the you know, what we've called white collar jobs are going to not be as needed, or AI or technology is going to be able to take some of those jobs and be able to automate them. And yet skilled trades jobs, we can't do that same automation too. So I think it's so important that we educate teachers about workforce. I think it's really important that we get children's books in their hands, because they can tell the story and kids can go back and reread them in the classroom. But it's also a very subtle way to get through to parents too, because ultimately if a parent is reading a book to a child, like The House That She Built, ultimately the parent is learning with the child and there's a conversation with that, but you're also helping the parent to open their eyes too in a really informal way that's not in their face, but just helping them to maybe kind of subconsciously counter their own biases and say, oh, I never realized women could be tilers, or, you know, I never thought of them as being carpenters. And I think that's really important. So since parents do play such a huge role, especially in the high school years, in helping their children determine what they're going to go and pursue in post-secondary, I think the more that we can help parents to see this, but also educators as a whole in the classroom, the more we're going to, again, start to normalize and make sure that all careers are equally valued. And it has to happen young. And when we get to junior high, there's a bit of a gap in terms of, you know, literacy, like books that are easily accessible and into high school. So again, children's books are quite abundant at the elementary level to be able to expose kids to. So it's part of the reason as well, not just the research, but just the accessibility of tools that parents can actually use. At the elementary level, there's a far greater abundance of TV shows and books that kids can tap into and parents. And we start to see there's a deficit of as they go on. So it's part of the reason why parents, to really plant the seed for as long as possible for them too, we need that to start as young as possible so that when the high school decisions are being made as to where you're going to apply for, where you're going to go for your next step after you graduate, those ideas have been sitting with the parents for a while. And then, you know, it's then time for them to say, okay, maybe this is a good choice for you.
You're trying to alleviate some of that fear. It's interesting coming to like watching young people and their parents, you know, coming towards the end of high school and it's time for the kid to make the decision. And it's either one or both that are freaking out. You know, sometimes it's the young person's freaking out. The parents are saying, it's all good. You know, whichever way you go, that's fine. Other times the kid's pretty set on where they want to go and the parent's the one freaking out about, oh, like, you know, you just invest so much into your kids, right, to see them and you just want them to do well. And it's always well-meaning, but there's this fear as well of, are they going to make the right choice? Are they going to be okay? Yeah, so anyways, you can be alleviating that fear for the parents and the young people is important.
And I think understanding what those different fears are and then having a very strategic conversation with it. So, you know, one conversation is obviously like students are obviously concerned that they're going to find meaningful work that is going to align with their values, that is going to help with climate change. Like, you know, our Gen Zs and our Alpha generation have specific values. So if we can speak more specifically to those values and what careers align with what they want to do, that's really important. Parents have different concerns. They're concerned about, will they be able to afford to live on their own? Will they be able to be safe in their workplace? Will they have a healthy culture at their workplace? And so having a different conversation with those parents. And then within different cultures amongst parents, there's different values as well too. You know, certain cultures value entrepreneurialism. Others want to make sure that the child is going to have a, you know, a very good living and being able to support themselves. And so I think it's really about finding what are those different pieces that every parent in a specific culture really resonates with them and having a conversation that is very much attuned to that. Because I think sometimes we think, oh, in Canada, for example, we'll talk about the fact that in as an apprentice, you earn while you learn. So you're earning money. You're also getting hours towards your journeyperson status. You're going to go back to school. It's going to be subsidized by the government. And so we're talking about the fact that kids are going to graduate without debt. And that's fantastic. But then you talk to certain populations and they say, but you know what? Our parents are going to pay no matter what. So it's actually much better to talk about how in their 20s they could become entrepreneurs and own their own company and start making six figures and then seven figures in their 30s. That would help to allow for certain populations, you know, in particular, we've been told by our South Asian populations, that would help those parents be more willing to buy into career paths in the trades, whereas typically they don't tend to overwhelmingly say yes to that if their children approaches them with that. And so I think we just have to be mindful that the way in which we have a conversation has to be a little more tailored to the people that we're speaking to. And so, and then with teachers, it's a different conversation there as well too, talking about the fact that it's not just post-secondary, it cannot be synonymous with college and university. There's a third form and it's apprenticeship and it just looks different. It's 85%, you know, on a job site, 15% in a classroom. And so really just changing the conversation and really explicitly communicating it so that there's no misunderstandings. Because I think right now it's quite murky, at least in Canada. People don't really know what apprenticeship is. And so, again, that's kind of why we default back to the college and university programs that tend to be the ones that parents recommend. It's because they don't know. And it's really innocent on their part too. And so if we really want to create some headway and really change this idea, we need to really kind of target what are the barriers, what are the conversations that have to be had, how do we actually go about having this in a way that's going to be receptive and not feeling like it's preaching, really just like a did you know kind of conversation.
And that's why people like you are so important, Angela, because not everyone's going to have that understanding of how to have that nuanced conversation. And I think, you know, and obviously, and over time, teachers and stuff can, you know, build up some of that, but they're still only going to potentially have, you know, they're not going to be able to have the insight on all, you know, all areas to certain depths. But that's why it's so important to have this conversation on a broader level to help people sort of start to, I guess, broaden their perspective a bit. And so long, and like you said before, that whole, it takes a village. Like, so long as everyone is expanding their perceptions and concepts of what a career could be, how you could do it, and thinking about the individual and prioritizing the individual in front of us, and what their need is, and what are their fears, and what are their insecurities about the future of their career or their young person's career, then we'll be able to, you know, better support one another through these decisions rather than defaulting to some sort of really cookie cutter perceptions that maybe we've had of, oh, you just, if you want a good job, you just go to university and then it, this magically happens, you know. And it's, I don't know about Canada, but I know there's a lot of university degrees that people complete in Australia that they never actually ultimately work in, or lots of, you know, starting three or four courses before they actually find the one that they want to actually see out, and then potentially still don't work in. So, the more nuanced we can have conversations with an individual and actually speaking to them as a person, and then having an awareness of different pathways that they can explore, is the better, right?
And I think that's where technology also plays a very unique role too. So I have a friend, and he's created a software program. It's based on behavioral science, and it's called Joptimize. And the whole idea is by taking kind of five chapters, which is really just a series of questions. What happens is it says, like, how likely would you be to want to take apart a bike and put it back together again? And there's five selections, everything from very unlikely to very likely. And what it does is it creates a profile for the individual. And this particular program, they've matched with United States Department of Labor's ONET database, which in North America is used by banks and all sorts of different organizations to create reports in terms of the future of work, and especially with our skills economy. And the whole idea is that at the very end, the student is actually matched up to careers which use the same skills. And so while, you know, a graphic designer and a dental hygienist might not look at face value like they're the same skill set, they happen to be. And so the whole idea is, I think that if we can have more digital tools that can be used asynchronously so that students can get the idea of what are my skill sets, how does that align with what different careers are? What does that job profile actually look like? Okay, and now I can say, yes, I'd like that idea, or maybe not at all. And what it does is it helps the student and then ultimately the parent to be able to say, okay, I never even knew this career existed, but here's what your skill set is based on this vetted tool. And then here's all these careers. And I think that the more we can use those kind of tools, one, we alleviate all that stress on the guidance counselors too, because now the student can come to the guidance counselor and say, so here are the things I'm interested in. Where are my post-secondary programs that I can pursue this? That's part of it. But it also allows for parents and children to have a much more robust conversation about what careers are actually ones that they want to pursue. And again, as parents, I'm a parent too, we're limited in what we know as our own as careers. And our daughters are grades 3 and 5. And our grade 5 daughter she's just like the research support, started really having those career conversations with us this year. It's happened before, but now she's getting serious about it. And we now know between now and next year, the research tells us this is prime time, because in junior high, she's not going to be as engaged in talking with us about this. So the more we can give parents and teachers and students those tools that they can help tease it out themselves, then it just gives them that much more, again, leeway to go in to a college, to maybe do a career day, to go and talk to someone in the field, to job shadow, but with an informed kind of database that's saying, here's what you might want to do. Here's what seems to align well with your interests. And I think that this is maybe a missing piece that I think a lot of countries, I think, are talking about when I talk to people from other places. There's only a handful of tools that do this really well. And there's only one that I know of here in Canada. And so we really do need to give parents and education as many tools as possible. And then the more we align it with what our workforce needs are as a country now and in the future, the more we fill those gaps that we need, but the more we also get kids into careers that they're going to have longevity in and be able to pursue and escalate through as well too. So they start in a certain role, but then there's all these career options that follow as a result. It's like a stepping stone. So we give them the first career and then they can step on to their next career step after that. And we just need to help facilitate that better. And I think that that's one of the things that as a high school teacher, 20 years ago, I haven't seen a lot of change from the time I started to kind of where we're sitting now in education in that particular piece. And I think that that would be a huge game changer to have some really great tools out there for parents to tap into.
Mm, absolutely. I always like to turn it back on my guests as well to hear about their career journey. What are some lessons that you've learned from your own career that you now look back on and that you've learned about yourself and your life?
I would say number one was that I did not know all the careers that were out there. I was both naive and I would say that at times really regretfully, maybe a little arrogant about thinking, oh, we should just get kids into university programs. And I feel terrible about that. But I got to be honest. And I was very fortunate that my grade 10 student taught me to really take a pause and say, hold on a second, like, what are my blind spots? And I don't think as teachers, it's not an intentional thing that we're doing. I call it an innocent blind spot, but we just don't know what we don't know. And so I would say that's one of the biggest things, just talking more to industry. I would also say that as a parent as well too, I think that, you know, a lot of parents I talk to and when I get together with other moms, we tend to, I think, overvalue the idea, like the certain skills. So we want our kids to have really strong reading and literacy and numeracy skills. Those are essential. But I think that what we often overlook is that we need kids to have a lot of creativity as well too. And that only comes through free play and through giving them exposure to lots of different activities and through also being bored and having to figure out things for themselves. And I think that just looking at where the future of work is going, we need kids who really can see things through different lenses and connect pieces together. And so I would say that something I've learned both as a parent, as a teacher is sometimes you need less structure. You need the screens away. You need kids just to get out there and have the blocks, have the building materials, have the creative tools at their disposal so they can make things and then have the really good conversations about what they're doing and why they're doing it. And then I'd also just say, expose your kids to as many different people in your community that you can. So, you know, if you have a carpenter next door, if you have a doctor, if you have, a early childhood educator, let your children have those conversations and talk to them about these career paths, but always do it in a very neutral way so that you're not trying to suggest one thing over another. Because I think that it's very difficult sometimes as parents, we kind of have hopes maybe of what we want our children to become. Or we see as teachers, we see maybe as students have certain abilities and we think, oh, you'd be great at this. And I think it's so important to take that pause and say, but hold on a second. As you mentioned earlier, it's not about us. It's about the child that's in front of us. And it's about us trying to help align what they want to do. And so I really think it's really withholding your own judgments a lot of the times. And that takes a lot of just humility to say, I don't know about these careers. Let's research it together. Or I never thought of this before. Let's go and find out about it before just saying a flat out no, or just, you know, saying, well, what about this one instead? Which is what I did, right? With my grade 10 student, it's really taking a pause just to listen to them and have them kind of take that lead. And then also just encouraging them to do that research as well for themselves, I would say. And again, that's where we look at, you know, national tools or provincial tools that maybe we can help them go and search out and then start to use those tools to help them also figure out what they want to do. And, you know, in Canada, we have a number of websites that have job videos. So being able to showcase those in the classroom, but also kids can watch it at home, really trying to show what are those tools out there so that kids can start to discover these things. You know, if they're going to have screen time, maybe they can spend a little bit of that screen time on YouTube doing something other than Mr. Beast or whatever they're watching, right? Maybe they can look at some other things that might help them figure out who they want to be as they continue to grow up.
Hmm. Or they could study Mr. Beast's marketing strategy and learn how to, like, take over the known world.
Yes, not to slam Mr. Beast. He's my children really like him as well too. Exactly. But right, they're just really trying to, I think, use those tools that we have at our disposal and just look at the new ways that we can maybe engage our kids and have those conversations, have the iPad at the table while we're making supper and having them have a conversation. What are you watching? Does that interest you? Right. And having those informal kind of planting of ideas. Did you know about this career? And then have your child reciprocate back. Well, no, but I saw this online. I really think that it's so important that we're just really touching base with our children often at all ages, especially as they get older and it becomes a little bit more challenging, because that's when they need the guidance often the most. And as you mentioned, a lot of my grade 11 and 12 students would say to me, you know, Mrs. Coldwell, I don't know what I want to do. Or they come back after their first year of college or university saying, I don't like my program. And it's really that it's okay. You're going to figure out what you want. Some of your courses will transfer to another program. And it's okay if you don't know what you want right away, because ultimately, just like we don't know all the careers out there, they don't know all the programs out there either. And they really do have to try it out to really figure it out what they want.
Hmm. That's awesome. Angela, if people wanted to get in touch with you and follow along with what you're doing through Honor the Work, how would they find you?
So we have a website. It's honortheWork.ca. It's the Canadian spelling, H-O-N-O-U-R, honortheWork.ca. We're on LinkedIn as well too. We're on Instagram, honortheWork.ca. But I'm also on LinkedIn, so Angela Coldwell on LinkedIn. And that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. Just DM me. And on the website, we have all sorts of different books that you could order from your own country as well, too. Just kind of a collection of great children's books and resources that we've curated for Canada, but could be found in any country as well, too, the equivalent, to try and just be able to have those conversations about the skilled trades and start to plant those seeds, whether you're an elementary student or even at the junior high and high school level.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.